President Barack Obama is raising more funds in Alaska than his Republican challenger, Mitt Romney. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, October 17th. Good evening. I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, federal grants will help bring water and sewer lines to several rural villages.
Gastroenteric disease, respiratory disease, and skin diseases skyrocket when there's no water and sewer service. So our hope is that by providing some of these systems, we can actually keep people from getting sick in the first place.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Breastfeeding leads to healthy babies and healthier mothers. Women who breastfeed are less likely to get breast or ovarian cancer, and babies get fewer ear infections, score higher on IQ tests, and are less likely to be obese as adults. The road to lifelong health begins with breastfeeding. Call 907-465-3100 if you have questions about breastfeeding. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services WIC program, an equal opportunity employer.
Few people doubt Alaska will cast its three electoral votes for Republican Mitt Romney, but as APRN's Peter Granitz reports, President Barack Obama is outraising the former Massachusetts governor in the state.
Alaska has not supported a Democratic candidate in the presidential race since Lyndon Johnson's landslide re-election in 1964. So it may come as a surprise that Mr. Obama has hundreds more donors in the state than Mr. Romney does, 575 to 392. And he's outraising his challenger by dollar amount, too. Sheila Krumholz is the executive director of the Center for Responsive Politics. She says as of October 1st, Mr. Obama had raised $434,000 in Alaska. That's $150,000 more than Mr. Romney. Mr. Obama actually raised the most in Alaska in 2008, so this cycle is a continuation of the trend. Krumholz says this time around, Mr. Obama has almost raised more in Alaska than all Republican primary candidates combined.
Roughly 50% of the money going to all presidential candidates, including the wide field of candidates running in the GOP primary, roughly 50% of all that money went to Obama.
The third largest recipient in Alaska? Texas Congressman Ron Paul. He took in nearly $100,000 this presidential campaign. Krumholz says the Republican primary could have siphoned off some would-be donations to Mr. Romney.
The Ron Paul donations, if they were to go to any other GOP candidate, and that's a big if, would have gone to Romney rather than Obama.
Overall, the Center for Responsive Politics tallied $893,000 raised for the presidential election in Alaska. That ranks 48th among states in the District of Columbia. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
The Parnell administration wants to put 2 million acres of the Tongass National Forest into a state-managed logging trust. It's one of several recommendations released yesterday by the governor's Timber Jobs Task Force. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Governor Sean Parnell formed the task force last year. Its 9 members include 4 state officials, 3 industry leaders, 1 federal representative, and a resident of a logging town. The governor issued an executive order creating the statewide panel as he pulled his administration out of the Tongass Futures Roundtable. That's a larger regional organization, including environmental and tribal groups. Several of the Timber Task Force's proposals would give the state control of federal land.
These lands would be for economic development and would support a timber industry in southeast Alaska.
State Forester Chris Mache chairs the task force. He says its most ambitious plan would put up to 2 million acres of national forest into a state-managed trust. That would make it easier to harvest.
If the state did acquire the acreage, it would have to have a forest management plan and other documents completed, just like it has currently under the federal ownership, the big difference being that federal ownership has a much more burdensome process to go through.
The goal is to provide timber to revive the state's shrinking logging and milling industry. He says 2 million acres would do that. Owen Graham represents the Alaska Forest Association, an industry group, on the task force.
Our goal is to restore what we call a fully integrated industry, you know, and have enough mills, not just sawmills, but mills that could process the pulp logs and utilize each type of wood.
The Tongass National Forest covers about 17 million acres, more than 80% of Southeast. The panel proposes exchanging about 250,000 acres of state land outside the region for parcels in the Tongass. Meish says state officials would then turn it over to communities for economic development.
The task force spent a lot of time looking at Southeast and came to the conclusion that the communities in Southeast would benefit greatly if there was a more diverse ownership of land.
The task force also wants federal legislation allowing states to run timber sale programs on Forest Service land. They would use state rules, not federal regulations.
It just appears to be entirely unrealistic.
Bob Claus of the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council says any proposals to take over federal forests are dead on arrival.
Then the history of the land management of the Tongass, proposals like this have been floated and been shot down by both industry groups, by environmental groups, by the people nationwide who are concerned with their national forest.
Alaska Regional Forester Beth Pendleton was named to the original panel, but the agency changed to an advisory role, in part due to state legal action against the federal government. Forest Service spokesman Ray Massey says the agency disagrees with some of the task force's plans.
Right up front, we said we don't really endorse the findings or recommendations of this report because we do disagree with several of the findings in the administrative order that started this group of people to provide this report.
The panel also wants to establish new state forests or expand existing ones. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting in Juneau.
An annual report on crime in Anchorage reveals the number of rapes and robberies in the city are up. Rapes are up nearly 6% from 2010 to 2011, and robberies are up about 1%. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has the story.
Mayor Dan Sullivan used his weekly press briefing to highlight the report. Police Chief Mark Mew was on hand to explain the numbers. According to the report, there were 264 rapes in Anchorage in 2010. In 2011, there were 283.
The forcible rapes are up by 19 over the previous year. I want to make sure you understand that this we're talking about forcible rapes here, not talking about the overall sexual assault picture.
Next year, Mew says, instead of forcible rape, the FBI will use a new category called sexual assault, which encompasses a broader range of illegal sexual conduct. The numbers come from the 2011 Uniform Crime Report. The report has been around since the 1930s. The figures are compiled by the Anchorage Police Department, and the FBI publishes them each year. In addition to an increase in the number of rapes, there was also a slight uptick in robberies.
The robberies are up. They're 11 more than the previous year, but that's from a place that was near historic lows. So we're still happy about where the robbery numbers are. And we think that those low robbery numbers are related to our shift in focus on street-level drugs.
Mew says he believes that faster turnaround of drug cases is helping lock up offenders quicker, keeping robbery numbers down. He also noted that population growth is also a possible explanation for the increase in both rapes and robberies. The police service area for Anchorage grew by around 4,200 people between 2010 and 2011. The other crime categories tracked in the Unified Crime Report are murder and non-negligent homicide, aggravated assault, burglary, larceny theft, and motor vehicle theft, all of which went down in 2011. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Alaska state troopers have identified the pilot of a downed cargo plane that crashed en route to a McGrath area mine on Monday. The deceased pilot is Peter B. Iverson, Sr., aged 62, of Anchorage. Iverson was flying the cargo plane from Wasilla to Nixon Forks Mine near McGrath when the plane crashed. Meanwhile, the search continues for another pilot who is still missing, Brendan Mattingly of Palmer. Mattingly and his plane, a Piper Super Cub, were last seen in Soldotna on Saturday. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new take on history at the Sitka Historical Museum.
There are just so many ways to interpret history and to tell the stories that I think it's important to tap into all of them.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment. On the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Alaska Housing Finance Corporation offers home choice seminars that provide tools for making informed decisions about purchasing and financing a home, and loans tailored for first-time home buyers. There's more information at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
Juneau's new mayor says the capital city needs to take on a bigger leadership role in Southeast Alaska. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Just after being sworn in Monday night, Merrill Sanford urged his fellow assembly members to reach out to other communities in the state, especially Southeast.
Join with them in their celebrations, in their sad times, and bond as a group. Like we need to. We definitely need to do that in Southeast and stop this decline of population and stop this decline in our region.
Southeast Alaska's population has been flat for the past two decades as residents have aged and birth rates have dropped. The State Labor Department predicts those trends will continue over the next 20 years. But state economist Molly Abrahamson says population shifts vary from community to community within the region.
For instance, Haines last year had they had a larger growth rate than Matsu, and that was driven by retirees. So a lot of this population projection information, you just can't know. Who knew people were going to retire to Haines?
In the past, Sanford has advocated creating more jobs in the timber and mining industries as a way to boost the region's population. Abrahamson says mining jobs in Southeast got a big boost in 2010 with the opening of the Kensington mine near Juneau. And while timber took a hit in the mid-90s and early 2000s with pulp mill closures in Sitka and Ketchikan, jobs in that sector have been on the rebound since 2001.
It's a very seasonal industry, but we are seeing our summer peak employment steadily increase for the last 7 or 8 years.
Abrahamson says Juneau's economy, and to a lesser extent the rest of Southeast, continues to be dependent on jobs in government.
Juneau is definitely government dependent because of the capital. However, local government and tribal governments, as well as school districts, are often the largest employers in southern Southeast Alaska. They can be the largest employer in the entire town.
Sanford says he wants Juneau to lead by example, and he may find an ally on the assembly in member Carlton Smith, who echoed the mayor's comments at Monday's meeting.
We need to look to sustain employment in the community and growth of employment, new relationships with our neighbors here in Southeast, as we have goals in common. We need to create a new, fresh identity for our capital city, and we also finally need to preserve the capital city of Juneau.
The assembly will have an opportunity to get more specific about its goals when members meet for the annual assembly retreat on October 27th. Mayor Sanford says he plans to bring in a facilitator to help with that discussion. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
The federal government is funding water quality projects in more than a dozen rural villages in Alaska. KDLG's Mike Mason has the details.
The funding was announced Tuesday, and it totals well over $28 million. The money will be used to plan, design, and construct water and wastewater projects in rural Alaska. The funding comes from the USDA Rural Alaska Village Grant Program, and it's going to the state of Alaska and the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. Matt Dixon is the Vice President of Operations for the ANTHC Division of Environmental Health and Engineering. He says there's a lot of need for safe drinking water and wastewater disposal projects in rural Alaska.
There are about 20% of the homes in rural Alaska are still unserved. That amounts to about 6,000 homes all across the state. Most of those are individual communities where there is absolutely no service. And I guess the reason that we're concerned about that is because of the public health impact. And what we find is that gastroenteric disease, respiratory disease, and skin diseases skyrocket when there's no water and sewer service. So our hope is that by providing some of these systems, we can actually keep people from getting sick in the first place.
The Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium is getting $21.8 million for drinking water and wastewater systems in Queethluck, Tuksuk Bay, Eek, and Lower Kalskag. None of those villages have community water systems, resulting in residents having to take care of their own water needs by using honey buckets and collecting rainwater. Dixon says it's anticipated that the water and wastewater projects will be up and running by 2015.
So what we'll be looking at this fall for money that's coming in now is to get all the materials ready, get them on a barge for next spring. Then really, because some of these projects are large enough, you're not going to get them all built in one season. So you're looking at a start in 13, you build through 13 and 14 and bring everything online at the end of 14, early 15.
The Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium is getting over $742,000 to plan for water and wastewater projects in Crooked Creek, Otmouthluk, Hoona, Kipnuk, Nanwalik, Pilot Station, and Hooslia. The third funding announcement made Tuesday is $6.2 million that will go to the state of Alaska to pay for water systems in Quinnahawk and Hooper Bay. The money will also pay for pre-planning for water systems in Seldovia, McGrath, and Tununuk. The Rural Alaska Village Grant Program has been around since the mid-90s, and its major purpose is to alleviate dire health and sanitation conditions in Alaska Native villages. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
A tribal-run kindergarten through eighth grade school near Palmer has made the study of Alaska Native language and culture its cornerstone. But funding to continue the Otna language studies at Yaneda'a School is drying up. The school has applied for Bureau of Indian Affairs assistance, but it's been turned down because of old state education legislation. The tune is familiar, but the words the children are singing are pure Alaskan. They attend the Yaneda'a School in Palmer. The school, run by the Chickaloon tribe, has structured its curriculum to include Alaska Native culture programs and Otna language instruction. The school is entirely grant-funded, but increased competition for language revitalization programs is fierce, and Yaneda'a did not get a hoped-for grant this year, and now its language program is threatened. Josie Wilcox, the school's education director, says the school applied to the Bureau of Indian Affairs for funds to continue the school's mission of educating tribal students and area children of all ethnicities. But the BIA replied that a 1995 ban against use of BIA funds to support elementary and secondary schools in Alaska is still in place.
And there are millions available to our schools, not just our school, but schools throughout the state, that we cannot access because of that rider in Congress. It makes no sense. It just doesn't make sense. We're a state that has a huge population, and yet we are underfunded.
Wilcox says lack of funds has forced the school to cut one language instructor position. Ray Barnhart, a member of the University of Alaska Fairbanks Cross-Cultural and Indigenous Studies Graduate Programs faculty, says the 1995 ban is a result of a 1975 legislative mandate to establish 21 regional education attendance areas, thereby dissolving the state-operated school system. A court decision a year later led to the creation of village high schools in rural Alaska to be implemented by the education attendance areas. Barnhart says the state then agreed to assume funding responsibility for Alaska schools, and BIA funds were cut.
It is problematic because the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which back prior to the mid-1970s was providing funds for schools in Alaska, that was discontinued, and the state funds haven't necessarily been able to provide alternative funding for a school such as this.
Yaneda'a began in 1992 and has received national recognition for its work. The language curriculum is based on the concept of total physical response, in which all instruction is given in Otna. But the knowledge of the language rests with the elders, says the one remaining language instructor, Jesse Boger.
It's really time is of the essence because, I mean, it feels like, you know, you got this impending doom because you know that you don't have your elders forever, and, you know, they kind of hold the key for us to be able to progress.
The school brings in two elders from the Copper Basin to mentor the instructors twice a month, but lack of funds has put that program on hold for the foreseeable future.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Grant Station, your fast track to funding, helping identify appropriate grant makers for your organization's programs and projects. On the web at grantstation.com. And by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Winter in Alaska can be tough on children and adults with asthma. Cold air and smoke from wood stoves is hard on the lungs. More time is spent indoors with dust, and colds and flus are common. Take care of yourself and loved ones with asthma during these colder months. Get a flu shot. Talk to your health care provider about asthma management. Take daily medication and know what can make asthma worse. For more information, visit asthmainalaska.org or call 1-800-LUNG-USA. This message sponsored by the American Lung Association.
Due to the state's recent redistricting, which changed legislative boundaries throughout Alaska, two Southeast Alaska senators are vying for the same seat. Both senators were in Ketchikan last week and sat down to talk with KRBD's Layla Carey.
Republican Senator Bert Stedman of Sitka and Democratic Senator Albert Kukesh of Angoon are competing for the new Senate District Q seat, but you wouldn't know it from the way they talk about each other. The two have served together in Alaska's Senate for the past 8 years. They also both belong to the Senate bipartisan coalition, which includes Democrats and Republicans. During a congenial candidate forum broadcast live to throughout the new Senate district, the two senators focused on what they've done rather than what their opponent has or hasn't done. Stedman, a 9-year state senator, says it's up to the voters to decide which of the two will best serve the district's needs.
I've got a 9-year record within the Senate, and 6 years as co-chair of the Senate Finance Committee, in charge of all the legislation that comes through the Senate that has any appropriation with it at all, goes to the Senate Finance Committee, and then the capital budgets.
Kukesh says that if he wins the November 6 election, he'll go from representing 129 far-flung communities to just those in Southeast Alaska's new Senate district. He says he looks forward to focusing on the needs of Southeast. Kukesh has served 16 years in the legislature, 8 each in the House and Senate. He says he and Stedman agree on many issues, including opposition to Governor Sean Parnell's oil tax plan.
We've served together and helped make decisions in different parts of the Senate quarters in Alaska in the legislature, and we've kind of marched along the same path for a couple of years now, so it's going to be hard to find differences. We've had a lot of agreements and behind the Senate coalition that we were part of and formed with 10 Democrats and 6 Republicans, and we've done a very good job.
Kukesh says the coalition changed the atmosphere in Juneau, but notes that the governor isn't happy with the bipartisan Senate group. Both candidates talked about the oil tax plan. Stedman says the tax structure clearly is broken and needs to be fixed.
But it's also as clear to me that the governor's HB 110, House Bill 110, is so far off the mark, it's ridiculous and should have never even been filed.
While the oil company's ability to make profits should be considered, Stedman says they're making plenty of money in Alaska and benefit from various credits that aren't generally discussed.
You don't hear people talking about the incentives we have embedded in our tax structure. All they want to do is lower the rate and keep the incentives. And quite frankly, if we would have adopted the governor's bill, again, I think it was even a breach of his fiduciary duty as governor of the state of Alaska to put forward a bill that egregious.
Kukesh says it isn't clear that the governor's proposed plan would result in increased exploration or production.
The question is whether or not we want to change oil taxes to make sure that big oil spends more money in Alaska. Well, we're willing to give the incentives, but we weren't able to get an answer from the oil companies that said they would do it one way or the other. Are you willing to spend some money in Alaska for new production? Couldn't get an answer for them, and the governor continued to push us on it.
Wednesday's candidate forum was a live call-in program. In response to a listener's question regarding funding of state parks, Stedman says that while he supports Alaska state parks, he's hesitant to increase the system's presence in Southeast.
I frankly believe that most of Southeast is already a park, and I'm a little hesitant to create more parks unless there's really good reason to do so. The federal government has the Tongass pretty much locked up, and we're trying to struggle with that issue.
Kukesh says he, too, supports the state park system.
I'm supportive of us having as many parks in Alaska as we can. I'm supportive of making sure we have budgets to make sure those parks survive and do well.
Another listener asked about expanding education funding for preschools, which each senator says he supports. Stedman, however, expressed concern about the potential budget impact of such a program. Also on the education topic, Kukesh and Stedman say they support forward funding for schools. In Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
Sitka's Historical Society and Museum has opened a new exhibit. It's not your typical show. It reflects a change in direction that some museums are taking, and Sitka's curator is leading the way. KCAW's Ann Bryce reports.
When you think of a museum, you might picture famous paintings lining the walls or ancient artifacts housed behind glass, but you probably don't think salsa dancing. Well, when you're Jackie Fernandez, you do. She's Sitka's museum curator, and she's challenging the way people think about history and art.
There are just so many ways to interpret history and to tell the stories that I think it's important to tap into all of them.
She moved here from Boston 2 years ago and brought with her the idea of community curating. It's a way of both honoring the past and celebrating the present by inviting residents to submit their own pieces to an exhibit. It can be anything, from an old photo to an original song, and Fernandez says it's a great way to engage the community.
It keeps the space relevant and vibrant, and it ends up allowing you to tap into all of this wonderful creative energy and all of this talent that's all around you.
This is Sitka's fourth community curating exhibit. It looks at the city during Russian occupation in the 19th century, when it was the leading economic center on the Pacific Rim. It was this period of production and opulence that led Sitka to be known as Paris of the Pacific.
It was so fascinating to look at Sitka as a Paris of the Pacific in the 19th century, but I couldn't help but think about how today, in its own right, it's lived up to the title because this is such an amazing, dynamic community.
Sitka submitted a variety of things, from a newspaper clipping about an artist who carved a totem pole for survivors of domestic violence, to a poster for the annual wearable art show. At the opening reception, a group performed a salsa dance dedicated to accordion player and longtime Sitkin, Alice McChesney, who died in 2009. Fernandez says it is a lot of work, but it's work that's well worth it.
It'd be much easier if I just got to sit behind my desk, put it all together, and do it by myself. That would be quick and fast and simple, but I don't like to do anything quick and fast and simple, and I think that Sitkins deserve better than that.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ann Bryce.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Ed Schoenfeld and Casey Kelly in Juneau, Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, Mike Mason in Dillingham, Layla Carey in Ketchikan, and Dan Bryce in Sitka. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com. Bioneers in Alaska, presenting practical sustainability strategies for Alaskans at its 9th annual conference, October 26th through the 28th at UAA. Bioneersinalaska.org.
And by
Condor Airlines, offering nonstop service to Frankfurt from Anchorage and Fairbanks between May and September, with connections to most German and European destinations. Details available at condor.com. October is Energy Awareness Month, and the Alaska Energy Authority, along with its partners, say the average homeowner saves $1,200 annually after an energy audit. Learn how to be energy smart. Visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.